Token Arthur was always curious about new things. One day, while flying over the jungle, he saw a group of animals exchanging goods and services using colorful stones. So he contacted fintech CDOs from fantastic companies all around the world and collaborated with them to learn all about finance. Inspired, Arthur asked Insert CEO Vasil to help start a podcast to share their knowledge with the world. This is what you are watching right now, Fintech CDO Podcast. Enjoy!
Hello, fintech leaders and builders. I'm Vasil Soloshuk, and this is our next episode of Fintech CTO Podcast. And before we start, so please like this video and subscribe to our channel to keep up with the fintech. And actually, let's start. And our today's guest is Anders Wassen. And hello, Anders.
Anders Wassen is the CDO of Qualia, Sweden's leading platform for improving and automating financial processes. Anders brings over 20 years of information technology experience to the company, which he has dutifully served since 2015. After achieving a bachelor's degree in IT, Wassen landed as an architect and engineer for the Nordic IT service company Enful, where he worked closely with IBM WebSphere Data Power Appliances. Simultaneously, in 2006, Wassen was hired as a B2B architect and IT consultant for Sony Ericsson, implementing new standards and deployment architecture for the tech giant. In 2020, Wassen was named an IBM champion in the category of cloud integration, an award he has won consistently during his career.
Hello, glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining. And look, so several important facts I know about Anders. So he is the CTO of Qualia, which is actually a platform for businesses, finance departments, and procurement to improve data management and also automate the processes and get real-time insights. And they provide the bridge to people network, a set of technical specifications that can be implemented in existing e-procurement solutions and e-business exchange services to make them interoperable between systems across the whole Europe. And also, I know that Anders was a champion IBM champion, actually. And it was a company's program for innovating thought leaders. And he was an IBM champion for 9 years in a row. And I think we will discuss this a little bit as well today. And as a data-driven solution architect, he has delivered multiple different solutions using IBM WebSphere Data Power. And now, as I know, leveraging his knowledge and his experience for the Qualia product. And also, first things first, so you can find the link to Qualia APIs documentations in the description to this video. And before our podcast, I done some research, and I think you have a really great documentation, because it's very, very important from my experience for fintech APIs to have a very good documentation. And thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you for the nice introduction.
Yeah, so, maybe let's start a little bit from this IBM champion thing. And, 9 years in a row and be a thought leader. And I think it's a really great achievement. So, and my question here is actually, so was it some kind of strategy for yourself to develop yourself like a thought leader, like a guru for some enterprise level platform? So what was that?
No, it was not my intention per se. During my years I worked as a consultant here in Sweden, I stumbled upon a lot of IBM systems, and I ended up on some companies that were leading edge on what they wanted to do, which in turn led to me meeting a lot of IBMers working on the products. And when IBM was planning on releasing a new product, or Data Power was not new at that time, but they intended to add business-to-business B2B add-on to Data Power, they knew I had a lot of experience on the B2B side, so they asked my opinion on what they had built. And I, well, the first version wasn't kind of very good, but we managed to improve it. And after we got the B2B module added to Data Power, I continued working on it. We had quite success on the sales of it. I was still working as a consultant at that time, so our consultancy company did the sales for IBM Data Power as well. And well, I continued with the IBM team, helping them building solutions on the Data Power boxes that I guess nobody really thought about building, as the B2B module opened up a lot of possibilities to build more advanced stuff. And our customers kept asking for more and more advanced stuff, and I built it. And IBM thought that my solutions were kind of neat. So I guess they honored me with the nomination for IBM Champion for a few years in a row.
Yeah, okay, great. So look, back to 2009, I actually was when I was doing my PhD, I was with IBM Research in New York, Watson Center. And what I have seen in IBM, that they have a really great collaboration between research teams, engineering teams, and sales teams. To accomplish, you know, the projects, to implement new technologies, and actually test them with some real clients. And yes. So, just interesting, what's your experience working in IBM environment on this?
No, well, I was kind of lucky enough when I started out in IT a long time ago, mid 90s. I almost immediately started working with business to business and was interested in that area, I guess mostly because it was so much challenges trying to cope with all the different standards and formats and stuff like that. And when IBM, I started out with other IBM products, actually a WebSphere Transformation Extender, before I jumped on Data Power. So the work I've done is I've kind of got the B2B stamp from IBM, I guess, from start. And they knew I worked with a lot of big customers in IBM customers in Sweden. So it was, I think it from their end, it was made sense to reach out to me and help them with all those different scenarios and requirements for the new products. And I think that's a very successful implementation from IBM to actually involve clients to help out in the development of new products and also at the early stages of the product release to make sure that everything works. And IBM does a really great job there, I think, yes.
Okay, yeah, cool. So look, anyway, so was it intentional or not intentional, like to become the expert in some real enterprise technology? So I think it's anyway it's a great career path. And my question here is, so I have seen some of the examples when some solution architects and CTOs, they trying to get more and more experience in some specific enterprise technology. And taking your experience into account, so what kind of advice would you give to like solution architects and CTOs when they're still searching for this particular technology, particular area of expertise, where they want to be, where they want to become a real unique experts on the market so that they can leverage their experience going forward. So any advice how to select this area of technological expertise?
Tough question. But I think first and foremost, find something that you are really interested in, that you feel like. For me it was the B2B sector or the B2B integrations were bad, is the only word I can use. If you look back like 20 years ago, it was horrible working with B2B, but also very challengeable, a lot of challenges. And I think that's what drove me to try to accomplish, get better, build better solutions, not just maybe for my customers, but also because I wanted to improve the way things worked in B2B, because I felt it was not very good. So if you find that area there where you are really interested, this is something I know already, but it's something I want to be better at, and then just start trying to fine tune it, and also find a project or find a task that allows you to work on that particular area. I think that's the best way of gaining knowledge and gaining experience on what you really want to do.
So okay, great. So and actually, do you still use IBM WebSphere Data Power or not?
I am actually sometimes a subcontractor to the consultancy company I left when I started working with Qualia. So I do have a few stragglers still calling me, asking me data power questions from the old customers that I used to work for when I did the consultancy. It's been less and less over the year, and that's also because the consultancy company that I worked for, they have gotten their new experts on data power, of course, since I left them. But I get a few insights now and again into data power still.
So for speaking about Qualia, so you're a CTO of the company right now, and what kind of experience helps you, previous experience, with many B2B messaging systems and data systems. So what exactly helps you to be a good CTO for Qualia?
Oh, a good CTO. Yes, well, I think I have a very broad knowledge because I've been B2B forces you kind of into a lot of different areas when you build and design systems. It's not only to receive the message. It's also about transforming messages, routing messages. So the integration part plays a big role in B2B. And I think that has surely helped me in understanding how to build a platform and how to utilize various data models. And I think most importantly, during my work with the B2B, I gained a lot of knowledge on different message types, also understanding that each message type actually consists of a data set. And that's something that we have taken advantage of here at Qualia. And when we built our databases or master data, we constructed that upon our own in-house format, which can take any message type pretty much within the B2B sector, and we store them all in one and the same data model, which means that we can utilize them for a lot of different things that we do in the platform.
So why did you decide to join Qualia?
Well, I've known the CEO for some time. He has been nagging me to jump on board, I think it was about 6-7 years ago, something like that, when our CEO Henry wanted to launch a platform, starting to build that from scratch, basically. And his ideas, his vision on what he wanted to do to try and make an easier time for users handling data in a better way. I think that that was exactly what I have been trying to do my whole career, basically. So getting the chance to jump board and start building that pretty much from scratch, it was too good of an offer to pass upon. Although I really enjoyed my time as a consultant, I like working for different companies, doing different things, have a varying set of tasks to take care of. No, I haven't regretted joining Qualia one single day yet. So still happy, still learning, still building. So that's what I like to do.
Yeah, great. So look, on different stages of the company, okay, and for different size of the team, CTO actually can wear different hats and sometimes have a hands-on work. Sometimes being a solution architect and then maybe be just more like a manager or people manager or development manager without any hands-on work. So what's what kind of hats do you have right now?
Well, I guess kind of all of the ones you mentioned. I try to get to develop as much as I can and am allowed, because that's still what I think is the most fun thing to do. But as the team has grown and as the customer base has grown, I get more and more administrative tasks. I get more and more of the manager tasks, and also to drive the team, set up requirements, specifications for new projects. That's still fun, though. So I'm moving more towards, well, a kind of a true CTO role. The more we grow. But I will never let go of the solutions architect, and for my own sanity's sake, I do have to write code a few hours every week as well.
Okay, and how many people actually are in the team right now?
In the complete team, we are about 20 developers today. Not 20 developers, 20 total, with a few two architects and a project manager, product owner, and then developers. So 15 developers about.
So look, I think that when you have a team and you have a system that is built by this team, so actually the architecture of the team, of the system actually is a kind of reflection of the structure of your team. This is a Conway's law actually, and having the experience actually building different data messaging systems, do you think that we can apply the same approaches that we apply for building software systems? We can apply them to for structure and engineering teams, like, you know, the similar approaches we use for designing software architecture, the similar approaches maybe we can use for designing the structure of the team. So what do you think?
To some extent, yes. But I guess the team also comes into trying to make the teams as efficient as possible, which also, of course, comes down to the different resources, skills, and of course, priority and what needs to be done. So, to some extent, yes, I think you can put it down in kind of the same way, trying to figure out what needs to be done, and who is going to do what and when that thing is going to be built. So I guess it's kind of the same process, but maybe from a bit of a different angle on the two, I guess.
you know, for team size of 20, what would be the most efficient structure? What do you think?
I think we structure our projects around we call it the design first, which means that we always build the design, like the front end things first, and we actually do complete mocks using Figma for the things we're building. Some projects, of course, doesn't have any front end; it's purely back end. But for those, we create a very detailed requirement specification of what needs to be happening. And when we have either the requirement specification or the front end mock design, we start drilling that down into a project structure where we use Jira for that to create epics, user stories, tasks that we then start to build. And I think that's the most important part, to actually do the groundwork, do the blueprints, so to speak, before you start writing one single line of code. That's at least something that I have learned over the years. When we first started out, we always started with the code first, and then we started figuring out, okay, what should this really do? Everyone was eager to start coding. Moving forward, we have also realized that we structure our team based upon skill and skill sets, what needs to be done. So we place the resources, the developers we have, into the specific teams that runs a project. We never run more than two new feature projects at one and the same time. Then we have like a running maintenance project that's always open as well, where we can sort of isolate the resources to be able to focus on one thing and one thing only for that period of time during that project.
So look, actually, we at Insart in my company, we also use a design first approach, because I personally believe that you need to plan everything in advance, yeah, before you actually start implementation, because you can avoid so many inefficiencies and so many mistakes, and you can minimize the actual rework if you have the design first approach. Yeah, and I also believe that Figma is really great for having the mocks, but you need also to have the design for your backend systems before you start the implementation. Mm-hmm. So I like it. So back to the team's question. What do you think is the efficient communication, how to establish the efficient communication between the team members, actually?
Well, we try to involve everyone, especially during the first phase of the projects. We ask everyone's opinions. Do you think this will be good? Is this a good solution? The architects normally comes up with kind of the base architecture. Is this going to be driven by message queues or APIs, or where storage, which database, and so on? But after that, we normally gather a team that's going to be involved with the project and discuss around the solutions. So we do not present them with, okay, this is what you're going to build. Everybody gets to chip in and have an opinion, and then I think that also helps in driving the social factor of the projects, that people tend to start talk to each other more, discuss more, also ask one another, is this what we intended? Is this good? Should we do like this? And when you get the developers talking to one another, discussing solutions, I think that's beneficial for the whole project, the whole team, and especially for the outcome of the product that we release in the end.
And what are the most common mistakes developers can do while designing the data-driven system?
I think not looking at the overall picture. Data-driven projects tend to include a lot of moving parts. Like we are building most all of our new projects, new systems, we build on a microservices architecture. That means that we have a lot of dependency on data we need. How do we handle, for example, account identifier. If you have multiple databases in microservices, you will need to take care to know, okay, this account, it cannot be account A in one microservice while it's account B in another microservice, because then everybody's going to be very confused if you need to start mapping between accounts. So I think it's understanding the full platform, the full functionality, and especially understanding what you build and why you build it is I think the most important parts of starting up a new project and getting the team on board.
All right. So actually for Qualia product, this is a data management platform for business transactions. And you also mentioned that you like to find, inefficiencies and the business processes in B2B business processes. So, as I understand, Qualia solves a really, really important challenge and problem on the market. But can you describe what are these specific challenges for electronic invoicing and electronic order management that you are solving?
I think looking back, as I said, business to business was really bad from the extent of there was no standard that everybody used. There were no message format that everybody used. Normally, when you wanted to start sending business to business messages, you contacted your supplier or your customer, depending on who you wanted to communicate with, and then you discussed with them. How should we send it and in which format? A few years ago, 2018 to be exact, in Sweden, we started using a new standard called PEPPOL, which is now mandatory in all the European Union countries to send and receive, procurement messages, basically invoices, orders, order responses, dispatch advices, and so on. The PEPPOL standard is strictly standardized and both communication protocol, which is based upon AS4, Applicability Statement 4, also known as EBMS or e-business messaging systems, and also the message structure, like the invoice, the order, and so on, is also strictly validated according to rules called Schematron rules, which is kind of a XML schema definition on steroids, where you can actually run logical rules checking if line item summary adds up to the total summaries and so on. And what we have tried to do, or are doing, I should say, is merging companies onto PEPPOL in an efficient and streamlined way, and also helping them to adopt the standard and start using it as it's growing rapidly within all of Europe, but a lot more speed is within the Nordic region, where PEPPOL is growing fast. And I know in the US they are currently structuring the production specification for PEPPOL in the US as well. They have just finalized phase 3 of a trial for adopting PEPPOL in the US as well. So it's gaining traction, and it's going to be the first ever, I'd say, worldwide standard for business-to-business communications. And it's used in New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, Japan is coming, and a few of Middle Eastern countries as well have joined Pepl already.
So am I right that you're participating in developing this standard Pepl?
Yes, Pepl is constructed as it's called Open Pepl. So it's a group where you can. We have meetings. We discuss. All specifications are open. Kind of same structure as an RFC, basically, and discussing with stakeholders within Pepl. We are capable of adopting, adding to the standards, changing things that we maybe don't like, and so on.
So, how big is the network of companies who actually already implemented the Pepl into their platforms?
Oh, that's an excellent question that I actually don't have the answer to. But in the Nordic region, it's growing exponentially at this point in time. It can take we 2 years ago when we onboarded. A new customer, we ran their supplier registry, I think about 5,000 companies. When we did that 2 years ago, I think about 20% of the companies we added had a Pepl address. We did the same just 2 or 3 months ago, again, with around 5,000 companies that we added into a new customer's specification. And then more than 50%, I think it was 54% of the companies had a Pepl address.
So what types of companies are they that implement the Pepl?
It's all sizes. So because in the European Union, a lot of countries have actually mandated the use of Pepl. So in Sweden, since April 2018, it's mandatory to send Pepl invoices if you want to invoice any public sector. Company like a municipality or any government agency or something like that. If you want to send them an invoice, you have to send it as a Pepl invoice, and that of course drives the need for companies to use Pepl, because a lot of suppliers to the public sector, of course, they are forced more or less to start using Pepl, and that way as Pepl. Access point or Pepl service providers, as we are called today, we can help these companies out by offering them the solution to easily hook onto our platform, either using integrations or using the portal itself to be able to send Pepl invoices to public sector, so that they can continue to do the invoicing. And there's a lot of other European countries jumping aboard as well. Finland very soon. Sweden is also now starting using e-orders for the same in public sector, so that you'll be forced to send orders over Pepl as well soon enough. And Finland is also joining that. Norway is a bit further ahead actually than Sweden for the Pepl network as well. So.
Okay. So look, what we see in the fintech ecosystem overall. So all the companies, they should have some strategy around integrations with other fintech products, and not only fintech products, but with different third-party providers as well. And actually, to have stronger position in the whole value chain. For their clients, and as soon as you're a part of Pepl network, so what is your specific integration strategy? So with what kind of companies, products you integrate, for what kind of companies and products you provide your APIs? So what is this what is the integration strategy for Qualia right now?
We can see over. I'd say the past 2 years, we have seen an increasing interest from other vendors, mostly from like in bookkeeping or financial systems, to be able to integrate with other systems that are Pepl capable. because you need to be certified by the PEPPOL authority within the European Union to be able to send and receive PEPPOL invoices. So we see that it's the need for integrating with other systems are increasing. And what is also nice to see is that even competitors in the market, where you would normally see a company as a competitor, you can see that by adding integration to us, they can actually do a value add to their customers, which will, of course, make the customers happy. And we try to integrate with companies that we see is beneficial to our customers and, of course, the requests we get from our customers. This far, it's mostly for various financial systems, but also for some business-to-business platforms that run their payload in the cloud. We can see that they want to gain access to the PEPPOL network, and they can do that through us by integrating with our APIs very quickly and very easily.
Still watching us and have not subscribed yet? Let's fix this. Also, don't forget to like this video and take a look at the other episodes we have. See ya!